It's Mail It In Friday.
I just sort of space out for about an hour.
Yeah, it's Mail It In Friday.
I just stare at my desk, but it looks like I'm working.
So what?
I'd say in a given week, I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
Shut up and drive.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
Mail It In Friday off and running. The O-Dog officially mailing it in. He's not in here today. He's down at the ACC. Hall of Fame weekend, so it's Hall of Fame night. Leafs Bruins will tee it up throughout the afternoon. Noodles partially mailing it in. He's currently calling a hockey game being played in Sweden, but he'll be here later this afternoon. Jonas Siegel from The Athletic, not mailing it in.
No.
What's happening?
I've noticed that O-Dog's been mailing it in on Fridays quite a bit. Like, not even, actually, it's beyond mailing it in. It's not showing up. What's that qualify as?
Yeah, developing a pattern here.
Should we rename the day?
Beyond mail it in?
Yeah, what's the next stage?
I'm not sure.
It's like the give a blank meter is...
Peter Horacek. He's Peter Horacek.
Remember those days, man.
Those were the best. Like, they were the worst, but they were the best.
It was like there was a firestorm every single day. It was crazy covering that.
I can't imagine we will ever experience another season like that. Yeah. Ever. I just cannot imagine it's ever going to happen because the whole season was a tire fire.
Yeah.
That whole season. It began day one, the Feshchuk piece with Steve Spott, what he was saying about Randy and Nonis and Phil. And Phil, day one of camp, saying he's never, like, he's not on the ice at all.
Summer.
That was Shanahan's first year.
Yeah, Randy got fired.
Randy got fired. Salute Gate. Kadri got suspended for three games or 3 days, I think it was.
3 games, yeah.
There was so much
action. That was a time.
It was remarkable to cover. Remarkable to come in here every day because there was new material and almost exclusively negative.
Well, so isn't that easier, better for radio?
Easier for radio.
Like, compared to now, there's nothing. It's like you have good players. You have a good team. Generally, not much drama.
I don't think the Leafs are quite to that status yet.
They're not a tire fire.
No, they're not a tire fire. They're by no means, but it's not like they are what Chicago has been the past 6 or 7 years.
Where they're kind of boring now because it's been like the same.
Although they lost again last night. They're having some problems.
Not as good. Right.
I think they're actually circling back into interesting radio during the regular season because, yeah, for like 6 years, the 82 games, you just had to get through them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure there were interesting points to the season. Guys get injured. You go on hot streaks. You go on cold streaks or whatever. But I'm sure in Chicago, over the past 6 or 7 years, they were pretty confident the team was going to figure it out and make it to the playoffs. But the payoff was 2 months of incredible material. 2 months of breaking down every detail of every shift in the playoffs.
Yeah.
So there's a payoff in the end. There's a light at the end of the tunnel of a quote-unquote boring, successful regular season team because chances are they're going to be a very exciting playoff team.
I feel like the Raptors are sort of boring regular season team. Like, I don't actually, like, I'm watching, but I'm not as concerned with what's going to happen in the regular season because it's all about playoffs.
I think this year's different, though, because of the kids. Like, the kids have been
intriguing for me. Yeah.
Yeah, very intriguing.
Like, but no one's going to care. Like, if the same thing happens again in the playoffs, they get dumped in the first round.
Well, yeah. I mean, you've got to get there to cross that bridge, but for sure. I mean, I'm with you. I think they're going to win 47, 48 games, maybe 50 plus.
Mm-hmm.
I think they'll have home court in the first round more than likely, and then we'll see where they take it. And can they beat Cleveland? Can they beat Boston if that's who they meet? I don't think they can based on the way they're currently built, but hopefully they prove me wrong. But I do think this year is much more interesting than last year because last year the bench was Patrick Patterson and Corey Joseph and Damari Carroll.
And they played this continuously dull style.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're actually fun to watch.
They're trying to change up the style of play.
Passing the ball.
Watching Kyle try to adjust has been kind of difficult to watch at times.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it boosts your interest level. But I think the youth, injecting youth into any team is always going to spark the attention of a fan base. Watching OG play on a nightly basis to see what he's actually going to develop into. DeLon Wright is a guy who I think has a pretty high ceiling. I think he's got a very high ceiling. I think he's a really talented player. He's got length. He's working on his shot, but I think he's got a defensive ability. Currently, he doesn't have to be a superstar. He's playing backup minutes. He's going to back up Kyle. But I think the kids for the Raptors have boosted my interest level in terms of wondering where they're going to take the regular season. You know, the past 2 years have been very predictable.
Mm-hmm.
I don't worry. If they lose three or four in a row, I'm not worried that it's going to spiral out of control. Like the Leafs, on the other hand, if and when they lose three and a four in a row, which they just did recently, you do get a little bit concerned because the sports are different.
But has your feeling changed about the Leafs? Like, we're 17 games, I think, now into the season. If you were betting, like, betting's the wrong way to put it. If you were putting odds on them making the playoffs, would you put it at 60%, 70, 80? Like, I feel reasonably comfortable, despite everything we've seen, that they're going to be a playoff team.
Yeah, me too.
And beyond that, I don't know. Like, I still don't know exactly what they are. I still don't know exactly how good they are.
Well, I think what's become evident is they do have flaws. They are a flawed team. Like
we knew they were a flawed team, but I think it's been in places maybe we didn't expect.
Well, I think it's defensively was what I was worried about.
And Gardner to be an issue so far? Gardner to step back?
I thought Gardner was going to continue at the pace he has the past couple of years. I thought offensively he was really going to move forward. And even last year, I think he had 43 or 44 points. Like, that's very good for a defenseman. But I thought with the way this team is built and him getting first power play minutes, such a potent offensive attack, there was a chance he could get 50-plus, and I don't think he's going to do that.
But Riley's going to do that.
It feels like Riley's kind of picked up where he left off offensively anyway. But Gardner's season as a whole, so far through 17 games, has been very underwhelming. He has not met expectations. He hasn't come close to it. I think Marner's probably the biggest surprise for me in terms of the numbers and in terms of the way he's been playing. Like, he's got 8 points through 17 games. And what I have found has been a consistent theme with him. He starts really hot, and he's been fading in games. And I found he did that a couple of nights ago against Minnesota. I thought he had a great first period. I thought he was their most noticeable player. He had jump. He was all over the puck. He was being aggressive. He was battling for pucks. He made some beautiful plays. And then he just faded. By the end of the game, I'm like, where's Mitch? What's he doing? Where is he? And that has to be concerning if you're Babcock. Like, why is he not giving a 60-minute effort?
Do you think part of that's like a young player with struggling with confidence? You don't get the result early in a game and you just kind of fade?
Might be.
Like, especially if it keeps building game after game after game. But, you know, people keep focusing on the fact that he has one goal. I would be less concerned with that if, like, he was every night you were seeing plays. Like, you were seeing him make plays. You were seeing him set up his teammates like you did last year. Like, it was apparent through, like, February. Like, it was this conversation, like, who's going to lead the team in scoring? Is it going to be Matthews or is it going to be Marner? And then Nylander kind of came on the scene. But since then, since the middle of February, he's not looked the same. And maybe, you know, maybe it's our fault in assuming that young players just go up and up and up and up and don't, like, take a step back. Like, Dylan Larkin in Detroit, remember he had that great rookie year? And then last year, I think he had like less than 30 points, something like that.
Oh,
he
had a
really
bad
stepped
year.
Back.
Yeah, really bad year. And now he's bounced back again in year
right.
three.
Right, so maybe we shouldn't just assume, like, there's Matthews and there's McDavid and there's guys like that who it's just going to be up, up, up. But maybe, like, for everybody else, even someone as good as Marner, it's like you're going to have progression.
I think that's reasonable. And I think the one guy, maybe the guy in the NHL world that would be aware of that is Lou Lamoriello. He's seen it all. Lou has seen it all. And what we get obsessed with in this market is water cooler talk, what trade could be around the corner, hypotheticals left, right, and center. If you had to make a deal, would you do this for that? Lamoriello's not sitting there because of a 17-game spiral. All of a sudden, Mitch Marner's on the market. Like, he doesn't think that way. He doesn't approach the game that way. That would be silly. It would be silly.
Well, that's how it seemed like
it was
a little bit before here, Remember, like, how constant it was that.
But that's the outside.
Adrie was in rumors.
But that was us. I don't remember that being Burke and Nonis. I mean,
they're not going to come out and say that. But
what gave you that impression, though?
I mean, we had insiders on this like station network talking about that. You know, the team might look at moving Gardner. The team might look at moving Kadri. I don't know. Maybe
never
it's just
happened though.
Maybe it's just the fact that this organization now doesn't say anything. Like nothing gets out because of Lamorello.
I'm sure that's a part of it. Like I'm sure. You know, insiders had access to Burke clearly. I mean, we know the way Burke would interact with people.
Sure.
And maybe he'd openly say, listen, we got a couple calls. We're willing to listen.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. But, like, just while we're on that point, like, I went back and listened to Brian Burke after the 09 draft. He basically told you every trade that they were going to do for the number 7 pick, which turned out to be Kadri. And he was talking about all the trade offers he was getting with Luke Shen and that he wasn't going to include Luke Shen in a deal. Nowadays, that you just don't hear that.
No,
stuff.
You never do.
So
very rarely, anyway. I mean, the NHL world has taken Lou's model and developed it league wide, as opposed to the Burke model. And I would much prefer the Burke model. I mean, the Burke model is so much more interesting.
Yeah,
I think the league should prefer that. I think if I'm Gary Bettman, I would openly have conversations with GMs and be like, can we be more honest? Can we be more open here?
Yeah, but it doesn't do you a service or your team a service.
It does the business plan a service. Yeah. Getting people talking is how you market yourself. It's free marketing. Getting people interested in your product, making people aware that things are... Like, look at the Matt Duchene deal. That was something that was building. We knew it was out there. Joe Sakic didn't hide from it.
Mm-hmm.
And we kept anticipating it. We kept wondering which team would be a fit, which team might end up pulling the trigger. And then it happened. And all of a sudden, you can look back and say, okay, who missed out? How does this improve Ottawa? Did they overpay? Did they underpay? Did Colorado get the right price? Why did Nashville become a part of the program? I mean, trades are always interesting, and rumors are interesting, too.
Yeah, but part of that is the way the NHL is structured with contracts. Like, the NBA is the most fun league for all that stuff. Contracts are like 4 or 5 years. Here, everybody's locked up. Like, well, anybody be... like?
That's Duchesne's, not true. Duchesne's got a year and a half left.
He's an except... I guess... Yeah, that's fair.
I don't think it's...
I'm talking, like, real top-of-the-line guys. Like, you're not seeing Chris Paul and James Harden and those types of guys get traded in the NHL.
Well, that's because the players aren't looking to move. I don't think it has anything to do with long-term deals. Yeah, but I don't think it has to do with the contract itself. I think it has to do with the comfort level. I think for whatever reason, the culture in the NHL is... You get drafted to a team, you fall in love with the team and the market, and you're comfortable there, so you stay there as long as you can. In the NBA, guys are like, forget this, I'm out. Like, one thing goes wrong, or for whatever reason, they feel like, you know what, I'd rather go play there, and they're out of there. Yeah. Like, Kyrie Irving, he's like, I'm done. Guy was playing, he went to 3 straight NBA finals, playing with LeBron James. I'm out of here. And guess what happened? They're like, okay. No pushback from the team. No... Like, they could have gone to him and said, actually, you're not out of here. You're under contract. You're not going anywhere. So if you want to not show up, we just won't pay you. You can sit there on the sidelines. But in the NBA, the players decide where they want to go, and the players have no qualms with moving on. They have no issue with
it. And I have no problem with that.
I think it's
I wish it
perfect.
Happened more in the
That's
NHL.
What you want. It's yeah. way more interesting. And sure, you as a fan, you're going to get burned sometimes when that's the case.
Yeah.
You know, take Toronto, for instance. Maybe if this was the NBA in 5 years or in 3 years, Nylander's like, I'm done.
But that's why it would be more interesting if the contracts were shorter.
Yeah, but I don't think the contracts have anything to do with it.
Oh, for sure they do.
But Kyrie Irving's under contract, and he got moved. Carmelo Anthony, under contract. Paul George, under contract. These guys are under contract, and they get moved.
Yeah, but those guys also, like, Paul George had a year left.
Sure, but...
Matt Duchene had one more year after this.
I think... Probably the next CBA, realistically, that's going to be
for sure
the hill they're going to die on. Remember, Bill Daly out and tried to die on that hill the last lockout? I think that's more than likely going to be a point of contention. We want to limit the amount of years players can sign
for. Well, because player movement's fun. Like, what was the most fun we had as far as, like, a day or something in the NHL in, like, the last couple of years? It was that day when...
Subban, Hall, right. Stamkos, all within 23 minutes went different places.
Fun.
And that was it.
Yeah.
But that we talk about that like a year and a half later, because we you never experience anything like that.
Well, and then we had like Drouin Sergachev this past summer. That was fun.
Mm-hmm.
But
oh, the more the merrier. The more player movement, I'm on it. It's Hall of Fame weekend. All the Hall of Famers are going to be at the ACC tonight. They'll be on TSN throughout the night. Mark Recchi's going into the Hall of Fame. We're going to catch up with him, get his take on what this experience is going to be like, get his take on Leafs Bruins. He was a big part of the Bruins when they won the Cup, and where the NHL is going from here. So we'll catch up with Mark Recchi. Noodles is going to join us. He'll pop in studio later in the afternoon. Jonas Siegel in here from The Athletic. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050. Big night tonight down at the ACC. It's Maple Leafs Bruins, but the Hall of Famers will be in the house. They'll be out there before puck drop. And one of my fondest sports memories took place years ago, a few years ago, Hall of Fame night. Dougie Gilmore was going in, a couple of other great, great players, and Eddie Belfour was going in.
I remember.
And he rolls out onto the ice in jeans and a leather jacket.
Everybody else was in a suit.
Everyone else in like Armani suits and Eddie's in bar gear. It was perfect. Great class this year, including our next guest. He was in the league for a long time. Lots of games. Multiple cup winner. We've had him on the show before. Here is Mark Recchi. What's happening, Mark?
Not much. How you doing? I was actually on the ice that game, too, with Eddie.
Come on.
Yeah.
What was your reaction when he came out in the leather jacket?
I didn't know, so that I was like looking at everybody else was in a suit. I thought, oh, I guess you don't have to dress up, I guess. So then I had to ask that question. I said, what are we supposed to wear on Friday night? They said, oh, suit and tie. And I was like, oh, I guess Eddie kind of went rogue there.
Yeah, he didn't take that advice. He went his own way with that, and I love him for it. It was great. This weekend's obviously really special for fans, and I'm sure for friends and family members, but has to be remarkably special for yourself. I mean, what are you expecting? How do you prepare for a weekend like this?
There's no preparation. I tell you, it's so surreal just even being here. You know, we've got our rings now, and it's just incredible. Like it's finally hit. You know, it hit home when Lanny called, but then you know you get busy, and all of a sudden it's here, and you get here, and you come into the hall room here, and into the great room and the great hall here, and see all these guys up there, and we see our plaques now, and it's incredible.
At what point in your career did you start thinking, I might have a Hall of Fame resume on my hands?
Probably not till the end. Not till the end, maybe when I maybe got my third cup and, you know, played, you know, 20-odd years or whatever, that I thought maybe I had a chance to get in there. And just kind of waited from there and just, hoped that it was good enough for the committee to believe that I deserve to get in here. And it's when I got that call, it obviously was the pinnacle of everything.
Mark, what do you remember about the way it kind of started? You go to Pittsburgh, Mario Lemieux's there. Do you have like any, do you remember anything like when you first saw him or playing with him or anything like that with Lemieux?
Oh, yeah. When I first saw him, yeah. It was, we walk in, obviously we're doing casting, not even close to what it is today, but we were doing some form of a test. And I don't think he could do a bench press. I don't even know what it was. I don't think he could do one. And I was like, oh, man. But I remember how tall he was. And then he got on the ice, and I was like, holy, what the hell am I doing here? But it was pretty incredible.
With Hall of Famer Mark Recchi, you were very fortunate. You played in some great hockey markets, Pittsburgh, Philly, Montreal, Boston. What was the best rivalry you were a part of?
Oh, God, I had some good ones, Boston and Montreal, on both sides. I was on both of them, so incredible. Philly-Pittsburgh was a huge rivalry. So those, you know, definitely those two were, they battled hard, so. It was fun to be part of those.
I can't imagine there's ever been a player that's played for all four teams. Like, maybe there has, but Pittsburgh, Philly, Montreal, Boston, like you said, those teams' biggest rivals, and you've been on both sides. Like, which fan base took it the most serious? Like, which fan base was most rabid about that rivalry?
God, they all are. It's incredible. I don't think there's anything different. They all are. I mean, I think Pittsburgh probably people are a little tamer about it, mm-hmm. but they're as passionate about it, but they're probably just a little tamer. But, you know, the other places, it's just, you know, being, you know, especially Montreal, and then you get Boston, you get the Boston crew there, and, you know, in Philadelphia, they're pretty hardcore. So, you know, it's pretty special to be part of all that.
Well, so Mark, you mentioned Philly. We talked about Lemieux. You played in Philly with Lindros.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just wondering, like, if you're thinking back to all the great teammates you played with, what does, like, your ranking look like in terms of, like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5?
Oh, God. I mean, I don't even know. Like, I know I played with Ronnie Francis, Paul right. Coffey. I Saku Koivu and, you know, Patrice Bergeron and obviously Eric, John LeClaire. I mean, the list goes on of the guys I was able to play with, you know, throughout my career. And even when I went to Carolina, Rod Brind'Amour and Eric Staal. I mean, it's just, you know, I was so fortunate that, to be surrounded like with players like this.
With Hall of Famer Mark Recchi, we'll get you out of here on this. The speech coming Monday night. What are the chances you're going to wing it?
Probably pretty good.
Good. Nice. Those are always the best ones.
Yeah. No, I have just a few notes, and it's basically just, you know, it's go from there. You know, a few notes, and then I kind of go off and, you know, I know what I want to talk about people and, you know, a lot of people to thank, obviously. So.
Well, we're looking forward to it tonight and Monday night, and congrats on a great career, and enjoy the weekend. Thank you for this, Mark.
No, I appreciate it. Anytime, guys. Thanks.
There's Mark Recchi. 1,652 games in the NHL.
A lot of points, too.
1,533 points.
Yeah.
And more impressively, 189 playoff games, 147 points. When you're almost a point-a-game playoff guy, those are Hall of Fame credentials.
Three cups. Yeah.
Prominent NHL markets. Like, again, I'm sure it has happened. Obviously, I can't think of anyone on the fly. But Pittsburgh to Philly and Montreal to Boston. Like, those are two of the prominent rivalries in the NHL, in the history of the NHL.
What do you think are good rivalries now? It almost seems like they've kind of, like, I don't know.
I think you can almost interchange every uniform in the league any given night. Put two teams on and just say, okay, instead of Kings, Philly, it's now Tampa, Washington.
Why do you think that is? Isn't it supposed to be the opposite, too, with the standings the way that they are? Aren't we supposed to have rivalries?
I think it's the toughness in the game. Like, that's what really sparked the rivalries.
Yeah, that's true.
Fights and hits and animosity and hatred, and it's just not there anymore. And that's what I was saying for the longest time, and I'll continue to say it. And I understand player safety has to be taken into account. And we're in a different world today than we used to be. But watch what you wish for. And I've been saying it for the longest. Watch what you wish for in terms of where the game is going and what the game supplies you with.
So you're saying it's going to a point where there's not going to be hitting? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying it's already at a point where there aren't rivalries. There isn't animosity. What have the Leafs done this year at any point where you're like, wow, it's crazy what's going on here? This could bubble over. Not once have they had a game like that. Not once.
And you're saying you get that from dangerous hits or fights?
No,
or
I'm saying the idea that there could be fights, more physicality, more scrums after the whistle, more chirping, more guys that are out there to cause problems. Now there's more of a focus on skill, which there are benefits from that style of game, too. I'm not disputing that, but take, for instance, what we're about to see over the next two nights. 20 years ago, if you were playing a home-and-home Leafs-Bruins Friday, Saturday night, by tomorrow night at Puck Drop, the whole league would be like, I got to see what's going on tonight. Did you see what happened last night? Did you see the goalie get run? Did you see that cheap shot? Did you see whatever? And it carries over to the next night. That's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. These will be two soft games that will just play out, and we'll move on, and then we'll forget about them.
Do you think playoff matchups would help?
It certainly does, yeah, for sure. Playoffs does factor in big time in terms of building up the rivalry and the hatred, but, I mean, the Leafs just went through one with Washington, and they played Washington a few weeks ago. Did you circle that game compared to other games?
It wasn't like buzz like it used to be when they played
And they played Ottawa when they played the Islanders in the late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah. So we're saying the rivalry's dead?
Well, I'm just telling you why I think that rivalries don't get sparked the
way
they used
to. But even in the NBA, it's not the same as it used to be. What's a great rivalry in the NBA? Like Cleveland-Boston's, eh?
I think that has a chance to develop.
Cleveland-Golden State, a little bit, obviously. Three straight finals.
Three times in a row.
Three straight finals.
I think you're probably right. There aren't as many great ones.
Who's the Jays' great rival?
Well, Texas in recent years.
Yeah.
Texas has
and
been
what,
one.
And what happened in those games?
There was animosity. There was a brawl.
Baltimore?
Guys getting hit. Baltimore is a big rivalry. Because
Darren O'Day?
It's just the idea that you know the two teams don't like each other. Yeah. I guess that's what I'm saying. And maybe it was easy to pick up on that because of fights and because of hits and because of scrums. But I never get the sense, I very rarely get the sense anymore, and specifically with the Maple Leafs, and partially, I'm sure, because they're a young team and they haven't had a chance to develop it, but I don't get the sense like there's dislike or hatred, where it used to be just natural. The Leafs hate the Habs. Boston hates Montreal. Philly hates Pittsburgh. You knew it.
Maybe it's the way players are wired today. Like, it's more... You know, there's 82 games, can't get too wrapped up in one game. Do you think there's any of that? I don't know. They don't carry this stuff like they used to. Like, no, if Matthews was playing tonight, would you care that Brad Marchand had that little tweet, you know,
maybe sarcastically about five against one?
Would that drive up the intensity? Do you think Matt Martin's going to be going after Brad Marchand?
No.
No.
But there wasn't Twitter 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Who knows what Wendell would have been tweeting, or
Jordan
on Twitter,
legendary tweeter.
That's actually a good five pack that we got to get to at some point. Former athletes who you wish had access to Twitter.
We already have a good five pack topic today.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we can do this as a backup.
We can bank it.
Like Dennis Rodman.
Rodman would have been spectacular. Sean Avery. When he first came in. Like, Avery's on it now, but now he's peddling books. He's into, like, fashion and movies and different things. He's not in the league. But, like, early in his career, when he was a loose cannon and seemed to say anything on and off the ice, put a Twitter account in front of him, look out. Ray Ferraro's coming up at 5 p.m. Marcellus Wiley, that Thursday night or last night, everyone's focused on the short week, Richard Sherman, concussion protocol, what happened with Russell Wilson. We'll get into that in 2 minutes. All right, Noodles is going to be in here probably at 5 o'clock because he's calling the Ottawa-Colorado game that's currently being played over in Sweden. Did you see the anthem singer?
No.
Did you hear about the anthem singer?
I did not.
See-through shirt, no bra.
Yikes.
If you want to get people in their seat, that's one way to do it.
Did they show it on TV?
I think so. Like Janet Jackson. Yikes. To the extreme. That's European, man. They're living their life, man.
Move. Just show up.
I appreciate it. That's very liberal lifestyle over there. We could use some of that. We could lighten up at times.
Sure. I would love to know what Ed Belfour's reaction was. They're like, you know, like the dress code, suit and tie, and he's like, nah, not doing that.
They probably sent him an email, and he just hasn't checked his email in 3 years.
Or just decided, I'm going to wear what I want to wear.
I love that other players, like Recky just joined us, and he's like, I was on the ice, and I was confused.
Yeah, it's like, what's with this guy?
What's Eddie Belfour doing? Leather jacket, jeans, shirt, bar gear. One of the best. Hall of Fame weekend. Paul Kariya will join us in the 6 p.m. hour. Ray's coming up. Marcellus Wiley. Richard Sherman done for the year. Torn Achilles. And as a result, everyone's got a take on the Thursday nighters. And players are coming out after the game and saying it's bogus. It's a joke. It shouldn't happen. I'm not going to overcommit to that take, that the reason Sherman got injured was because he was playing on short rest. because injuries happen on Sundays.
Yeah.
Injuries happen coming off byes. Like, I'm not going to commit to that, but I am going to suggest that every single fan would be more than willing to extend the season and just add a second bye week where you play your Thursday nighter coming off that second bye.
Yeah.
Like, it just seems like such a simple way around this problem. Simple way to negotiate with the players, give them one more week off. You've got the shortest season in pro sports to begin with. So instead of the Super Bowl, like, first week of February, it's the second or third week. You extend your season by, like, a week or two. Now, it's easy for me to say. I'm sure it's more complicated in terms of the business model and commitments with sponsors and TV and all that kind of stuff. And maybe the players would want more money if the season's extended. I don't know how the logistics would work out. But it seems like something they should, at the very least, be looking into.
Well, what's the idea behind having it on Thursday?
Selling like it for TV. For TV, that's
because
it.
Because that's like primetime night?
It's an open night for them.
Why not? Like, what if it was Saturday night? Like, don't you like sometimes late in the year when they have the Saturday night games?
But then you're fighting with college football, and you don't want to...
Oh, I guess that's true.
You know, you don't want to cannibalize your own sport. Because they need the NCAA. That filters into the NFL. They kind of work in conjunction. Yeah. Historically, it's college football Saturday. You don't mess with that. They do, like, week 16 and week 17. They might play a game or two in primetime. But I understand why they avoid that. But this was just all about greed and all about money. This was all about CBS and NBC willing to pay a fortune for an extra game on a Thursday night, and they took it.
I never feel like I'm in the mood, though, most Thursdays to watch football. Like, I have, like, this routine where Sundays, you know, mostly I'll just stay home and watch. And Thursdays, like, there's so much other stuff going on that a lot of the time I'm just like, eh.
No, I don't think it's helped their product. I really don't. I was of the belief, like, I'm such an NFL junkie, and I do watch the Thursday nighters pretty much every week.
Even the crap ones? Because there's a lot of bad
matchups. If it's a bad game, you'll fade. If, you know, the Leafs are playing, the Raptors are playing. If there's other things going on, the World Series, clearly I won't be tracking it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it won't be my top priority. But before they announced it, I was like, the more the merrier. But I think now, afterwards, you realize that what makes the NFL so great, or what used to make it so great, was you were always wanting more.
Right. You would look forward to it all week.
And they played Sundays. They never had a Sunday nighter when I was growing up. Hmm. It was 1 o'clock games, 4 o'clock games, and then the Monday nighter. Monday night was the big game. That was the game everyone wanted to play, everyone wanted to watch. And then they realized, wait a minute, NBC's willing to pay a lot of money for a Sunday nighter. Why don't we do that? And then years later, they're like, these guys are willing to pay for a Thursday nighter, so why don't we do that? And it's all about money. It's all about greed. And short term, I'm sure it's been worth their while. They've made a lot of cash. But I think long term, they're taking away from their own product because it's too accessible now.
It's like you're ruining the hype?
Yeah, there is no hype because it's such a quick turnaround. Monday night to Thursday night, before you know it, the next week has already started. Did you see Russell Wilson last night in the concussion protocol and how he got flagged by a spotter to leave the game and go through the concussion protocol, and the cameras were tracking him, and he went into the tent for maybe 5 seconds and came out. And now the NFL today announced they're launching an investigation. What's the point of launching it? There's no way he went through the protocol.
It was the same thing that happened here with Jonathan Quick. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
It was like he darted down the hallway and then he came back and then, hey, he's ready to go.
But there was an explanation for that. That was like...
That was still shady.
There was like a minute
left in the period.
It didn't look right, but I remember McKenzie explaining it that there's like two different forms of being flagged. Like there's one in the NHL where just the trainer has to talk to you and the other one where you actually have to go into the concussion protocol. I'm not sure why they have that. But last night, like Russell Wilson got flagged.
Walked in, walked out?
Yeah. Like they told him you have to leave, you have to go into the concussion protocol. There's a questionnaire, there's a certain diagnosis that has to be taken place. And it's just impossible for it to happen in 5 seconds.
Maybe it should be like a mandatory 5-minute timer has to go off.
Well, I think what needs to happen at the very least is you can't allow the players
right
to have any control. Like it sounds like Wilson...
Nor the teams. Yeah.
Yeah. Like the doctor's got to grow a pair and be like, you're not going back out there. And well, if he does, chase him and be like, hey, refs, Get him off the field right now.
Right.
We didn't go through this. Like that, maybe the pressure's got to be on the doctors to force them to do it and to communicate with the refs and tell the refs exactly what happened and exactly what they went through.
Maybe they throw a flag on the ice.
Whatever it has to be, either way, with either sport, right? Because if you allow the players to determine, they're going to say, get me out of here, get me back on the ice.
Well, like, I mean, if Jonathan Quick is talking to his own trainer, do you think his trainer is going to be like, no, you're not, you need a couple more minutes. Quick's going in.
Of course he is. The trainer's not going to stop
running him over.
Yeah. The trainer.
And the coaches are like, the coaches will want to put the guy right back in.
Of course. So you're starting goaltender, starting quarterback.
Yeah.
And a lot of times the coaches probably aren't even really paying attention. They've got other things on the go. They're not going to personally stop the guy or go into the tent or go down the aisle with them and be a part of the evaluation. So it wasn't a good look for the NFL last night. It wasn't a good look for the Seahawks in this concussion protocol. If that's all it takes, a guy walking in just for the optics of walking in and leaving, it's a farce. We'll see what Marcellus Wiley has to say about it. He'll join us at 5:40. Ray's coming up in about 20 minutes. Paul Kariya going into the Hall of Fame this weekend. He'll join us at 6:25. Jonas is in here from The Athletic. I'm Brian Hayes. Overdrive continues on the TSN Go app. All right, listen to Overdrive every weekday for the Upper Deck Leafs lineup player of the day on Friday. Today, call with the names of all five players. You can win a pair of lower bowl tickets to see the Leafs take on New Jersey November 16th at the ACC. And the theme this week has been former Leafs who were drafted by Lou Lamoriello. Today's Maple Leaf lineup player of the day is Steve Sullivan. Steve Sullivan. And the Upper Deck Leafs lineup is brought to you by Upper Deck Team Triples, available at ZypherEpic.com. Phone lines are open, 416-870-1050, 416-870-1050. First one in with all five players named. You're going to see the Leafs take on the Devils down at the ACC November 16th. Ottawa just won their game in overtime. So they went all the way over to Sweden, and Matt Duchene making his debut against his former team, and they just won it in overtime.
I haven't looked. Did he have any points? Did you look yet?
He didn't in the first three goals.
Okay.
I don't believe he was on the ice for that, but I wasn't really paying attention.
All right.
Kind of preoccupied on the air.
Are you into the Hall of Fame stuff? Like, do you get wrapped up into the debates? Do you care?
Yeah, I love the debates. Like, we had one off the air about current players, like where you draw the line on current players.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
Because there are obvious ones. We know Sid's in, Ovechkin's in, Malkin's in.
Taves
is in, Kane's in.
Yeah.
I think Carlson's in, Jager's in. I think Lundqvist is in. But then you start moving into...
It gets really questionable pretty quick.
Yes. Like very good debates where you can make a case on both sides, but...
Let me ask you this. I didn't even ask you this one. Carey Price right now. 70% chance?
I would say at least 70. When a goalie wins, although Jose Theodore won the Hart and the Vezina and didn't get in.
He ain't getting in.
And he's never getting in.
Price has the two Olympics.
Much better.
Or is it
he wasn't on the 2010 team.
He has one Olympics.
Yeah, he has one. He has one. He's a World Cup. He's got a Vezina. He's got a Hart. He's trending in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
Plays for the right team. I do think that factors in. Being a Montreal Canadian, you're going to get more attention.
I'm just thinking, like, for our five-pack, are you allowed to spoil it, what it's going to be?
Yeah, go ahead.
The five guys in any sport in their first three seasons that we think are going to make the Hall of Fame,
mm-hmm.
It's hard in the NHL to, like, think of guys that are going in that direction.
3 years or less into their career?
Really hard.
Yeah, there's one obvious one that we're both going to have.
Slam dunk.
But beyond that, it gets difficult. We'll get into that around 6 p.m. Ray's coming up. We'll get back into the Hall of Fame weekend. And Matthews is a no-go tonight. You have to presume he won't play again tomorrow night as well. Time for concern. Level of concern. We'll get to that next.